Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Monday, June 16th, 2014. Now, in the news today, we see a combination of two factors, both of them designed to take America down, economically as well as socially, culturally, a total collapse. I think this is highlighted by the article we have on InfoWars today from Michael Snyder, The United States of Debt. Total debt in America hits a new record high of nearly $60 trillion. Now, in the article, he points out just exactly how much money that is, because you can't get your head around the numbers, billions, especially trillions. He said, for example, if you started spending $80 million every single day since the time of Christ, you still would not have spent $59.4 trillion, which is the amount of the debt. Then to put it in another perspective, he says 40 years ago, the United States was just merely $2.2 trillion in debt. Now, in 40 years, we have made that 27 times larger. So what is it that's doing that? Well, it's a massive warfare state. We should think about that as we see the collapse in Iraq and we reflect on the policies that brought us there, the lies, the distortions that brought us there, and the futility of what we've done in every one of these continuous wars going back to the end of World War II. And we're going to look in the program as to, of course, who benefits from that. It's very clear who benefits from that. It is not an argument about the incompetence of government. It's about how government is being manipulated for certain people to make money. And they don't care what the cost is, either in debt or in the American blood of soldiers who die for their policies. But there's another part of that now. And of course, it's not just the warfare state, it's the welfare state. And Obama has been doing everything he can to expand the welfare state, but the collapse just isn't happening quickly enough. Now, understand that both open borders and welfare states, either one of those can destroy a country. Uncontrolled immigration, uncontrolled welfare, either one of those will do it. Together, they will do it very quickly. And that's what we see happening now. By design, as people in the Border Patrol unions are pointing out, as employees for the Department of Homeland Security is pointing out, and of course, they have been gagged with criminal threats for talking to people. That's what our government does. No longer any transparency, no longer any accountability. Instead, anybody in any part of the government is threatened with dismissal or even imprisonment if they talk about the policies. But these policies need to be talked about. Let's look at what's happening at the border, for example. We see today in reporters from InfoWars that have gone down to the border here in Texas, which is a major entry point, they say church groups now are shipping illegals deeper into the United States. Now, these are the Obama anchor children, the tools of the collapse. And as they're pointing out, this is a Department of Homeland Security person said that they cannot get any attention or relief down here. The agent wrote to us last week in a distressing letter. Prior to the DHS officialdom imposing an official gag order threatening criminal charges for agents who dare speak out, he said, however, prior to that, we desperately need immediately manpower, resources, and a firm support of Americans. This is de facto amnesty. The president and the secretary of Homeland Security will ignore this issue as long as possible in order to let as many illegal aliens gain entry into the United States as possible. Now, what they saw there when they were monitoring this at a bus station in McAllen, Texas, they saw these children now being taken by church groups. And so the question is this an act of compassion? Is it misguided compassion? Is it really helping these children? I would point out that what you need to think about is the instructions that you get in an airline when they tell you that if you're traveling with children, if there's an emergency, the oxygen masks will drop down and they tell you what to do. They tell you to first put it on yourself. Why? So that you can help these children. We have seen over and over again the compassion of Christians who go to other countries, try to help them, create an infrastructure, get water, do things necessary to live in that country, to help themselves, to lift themselves up, to teach them essentially how to fish rather than just giving them a fish. We've seen Christians go out of their way to adopt children from foreign lands, a multi-year process, tens of thousands of dollars typically to get this through. So it's not an issue of compassion. It's an issue of misguided compassion. A compassion that is misguided is going to take down this country because the purpose of this is a Cloward and Piven strategy. We've talked about this many times. Alex has mentioned it many times. It goes back to 1966, nearly 50 years ago. And what these two economists, these two social politicians, the socialists, had put together was a policy where they said we need to destroy the United States economy via a welfare state so we can then rebuild it into our socialist utopia. This is a tantamount to what was said in the Captain America movie, for example. The villain says to Captain America, we need to destroy the society so we can rebuild it the way we want it. And that's exactly what Chairman Mao did in China with his Cultural Revolution. He essentially destroyed the economy, saying that he could then rebuild it in his own image. But there's another aspect of it, and this is what Christians really need to think about as well, and that is Plato's Republic. For the longest time, authoritarian governments and dictators have always said, I want the children at as young an age as possible so that they're mine. Now we see these children being brought in, treated better than any Americans, treated far better than the veterans who are not housed in military facilities, but these children are brought in and housed in medical and military facilities at very nice accommodations compared to what we do for Native Americans, for veterans in America. What are these children going to see? Well, first of all, they're going to see a government that looks after their every need as far as they're concerned. They're also going to be separated from their family. This is something that's very new, the number of young children that are coming in. They're going to grow up as minions, as vassals of a new 21st century feudalistic state. I believe that's the other aspect of it. We've seen that happening, and we're going to talk about how we've seen precursors of that in years past. But as I was mentioning before, we see Border Patrol agents as well as Homeland Security crying out for help, talking about how the borders are just opened up to terrorists, to criminals, as well as to children who can be victimized by these criminals. And Christians should think about whether or not they are encouraging that kind of behavior of people putting even more children at risk in this dangerous journey coming to America. But we also see today Huffington Post carrying a story about the Border Patrol Union, who has said that they believe that this is intentional. The Border Patrol Union has said they believe this is an intentional policy of the Obama administration, not just reacting to an emergency situation. Border Patrol Union mocks immigrant children on Twitter. That's the headline from the Huffington Post. Now, what did they say to mock the children? This is the tweet. New annual job rating areas. Babysitting. Diaper changing. Burrito wrapping. Cleaning cells. Law enforcement? What's that? And then they put a hashtag, low morale, to which the liberals, as well as Huffington Post, respond with, let the racism flow. And they responded by, what's racist? Those are the duties that the agents are being assigned. That's what they're concerned about. They're no longer enforcing the laws of this country. You cannot have uncontrolled immigration into a country and not lose the social fabric that's there. But it's far greater than that. As I pointed out, it's going to lead to a balkanization of the country as well as having a captive class of children. Obama always wanted to have the children who are going to be his Obama Youth Brigades. Remember when he was campaigning, the Obama Youth Brigades. I remember back in 2012, we reported that Homeland Security graduated its first corps of Obama brown shirts, the Homeland Youth, and they were called the FEMA Corps. Isn't it interesting that it's FEMA that is now involved in this rescue operation, and it was FEMA that was graduating these brown shirts, these Obama Brigade children. And, of course, Obama has stated many times that what he wants is a large civilian corps that is going to be dependent on the government, that is going to work for him, that's going to be as large or larger than the army. A very dangerous idea, something we don't need to see happen. We don't need to be creating even more dependency on the government, and yet that is their policy. And so how does this work out? Well, they're not getting the kind of treatment that most people who come into America get, and that is the TSA inspection. We saw this happen to an actor, a famous actor from the Austin Powers series, the guy who plays Mini-Me. Vern Troyer posts a cheeky picture of being searched by TSA agents, while security reps say that the screening was standard procedure. Well, it's not standard procedure at our border, is it? Not at all. And, of course, as we learned from lawsuits in the past, this is something that is simply done to deny Americans their freedom and dignity. When John Corbett filed his lawsuit, he learned in discovery documents that in 2011, at the same time the TSA was threatening to turn Texas into a no-fly zone because Texas reps were rebelling against this kind of manhandling, this kind of molestation of men, women, and children by the TSA. They were threatening to turn Texas into a no-fly zone, and he learned in their own documents, they admitted at the very same time, that there was no threat at either airports or on airplanes. There were no terrorist threats. And yet they were doing this. Why were they doing it? Because it's part of a controlled takedown of our freedom, of our dignity, of our economy. Now, we're going to come back in the next block, and we're going to tell you about the warfare state. As we see the collapse of the Iraq campaign, as we see ISIS moving through, and as we see more signs of what have been, as everyone knows, massive continuous wars as well as uncontrolled military spending. And we're going to be talking to our InfoWars reporters down at the border of Texas and Mexico. They're down there reporting on what's happening at the border and its role in the collapse of America. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Edward Group. Today I'd like to talk about the war on women. You've experienced and heard about the benefits of Supermale Vitality. Now, the new formula has arrived. Introducing the new Super Female Vitality. I have specifically designed this formula to help the body naturally regulate itself without the use of artificial hormones. Key ingredients chosen from the highest quality sources. Each of these ingredients works synergistically with the female body in order to maximize overall vitality. You've heard the reviews and the feedback on how the original Super Male Vitality has revitalized relationships. Now, both the man and the woman can have the revitalization in their own bodies with Super Male Vitality and Super Female Vitality. Secure your Super Female Vitality today from our limited stock at InfoWarsLife.com.
This is Alex Jones for InfoWarsLife.com. The latest in preparedness is now here. An electrically stabilized colloidal silver solution that can be added to both your home cabinet and preparedness pack alike. Concentrated to 30 parts per million in what has been dubbed the survival silver solution. And it's entirely free of toxic artificial additives that are loaded into many products. Purchase your bottle of InfoWarsLife.com Silver Bullet Colloidal Silver today. And find other amazing supplements at InfoWarsLife.com.
Welcome back. Now, in our first segment, we were talking about the planned implosion of America as far as the welfare state is concerned. But, of course, there's also a warfare component to that. But briefly review the article today that was on InfoWars from Michael Snyder. He says, the United States of debt, he talks about how the total indebtedness of sovereign debt of America hits $60 trillion. And, of course, that's up by a factor of 30 in just the last four decades. Now, how do we get there? It's the welfare state as well as the warfare state. But first, again, to recap the welfare state, it's not just a crushing debt. It's also, as he points out, a coming tsunami of demographics with the baby boomers. That's what the Obamacare massive bailout of the insurance companies is about. Think about the bailout of the mortgage companies, and this is essentially the same thing with a demographic surge of medical care that's coming. They want to transfer that to the sovereign debt of the United States rather than have the insurance companies pay for it. And of course, they get a windfall profit in the meantime by selling policies that are way beyond what anybody needs. For example, a single man being required to have maternity coverage. So that's one aspect of it. We also have massive unemployment. Now, they use a different term for that now. They talk about people who are out of the workforce. They're not participating in the workforce because they've redefined unemployment. They need to come up with a different number. But, of course, in 36 years, this is the lowest it's been of people who are participating in the workforce. That's the easiest way. That would have been called unemployment in years past. But the main thing is the warfare business. And we see that in the collapse of Iraq. What is that costing us? Well, as Kurt Nemo points out today on InfoWars.com, the war industry stands to make billions off of the ISIS threat. He says, in the war business, timing is everything. And just last month, it was announced a few outstanding members of the military industrial complex would stand to rake in about $1 billion if an arms sale to the Iraqi government was approved by Congress. Considering the current situation in Iraq and alarm bells echoing through the halls of Congress, the sale will undoubtedly go through without a hitch. And he gives several examples. Beechcraft Defense Company standing to gain $790 million. AM General is going to sell Humvees to the total of about $101 million. Raytheon with a $90 million deal. And on and on and on. So the question is this incompetence or is this by design? We've seen weapons transferred to Al-Qaeda terrorists in Syria from Benghazi. We've seen weapons transferred to Al-Qaeda terrorists in Syria from Iraq itself. And now those equipped and trained Al-Qaeda terrorists, those that Dennis Kucinich and Ted Cruz said we were going to act as the air force for Al-Qaeda in Syria, now those Syrian Al-Qaeda, with the weapons and the training that we've given them, are now going into Iraq. It is part of a planned takedown. Now, I've listened to a lot of mainstream conservative radio hosts talking about how this is an existential threat to the Middle East, saying it's an existential threat to America. In other words, it threatens the very existence of America, what's going on with ISIS. Well, it does, but in a very different way. It threatens it by the bankruptcy of America, by turning this military-industrial complex loose on the American public. Just look what they spent on these boats. The U.S. spent $3 million on boats for landlocked Afghanistan. That's right, $3 million for just 8 patrol boats. And they make this point, and the Washington Post is making this point. Number one, Afghanistan is landlocked. Number two, not a single boat has arrived in Afghanistan, even though they bought them 4 years ago in 2010. And look at this, the third thing. Even though you could get these boats for $50,000 in the United States, and I think looking at those boats, that's a pretty high price, they bought them for $375,000. And then the Washington Post goes on to say, it remains a mystery why the boats were deemed unnecessary so soon after they were bought. In other words, they're not taking delivery on them because they said, oh, they're not necessary. We understand why they were deemed not necessary right after they were bought, because the war was not necessary any more than these boats are necessary. The whole thing is about making money for the military-industrial complex, those people who are paying off the senators to transfer money to them that way. And, of course, the entire military-industrial complex is going to metastasize into a surveillance state here in America. It's already doing that. We're already seeing this militarized equipment that is way over the top being brought to America. We see them approving all kinds of militarization of our police at very high expenses being driven by the federal government and these same industries that have been pushing us to war continuously ever since World War II. Now, what's going to happen in Iraq? We see just recently that the U.S. is now ordering a partial evacuation of the Baghdad embassy as an aircraft carrier is arriving in the Gulf. Now, this is the gigantic U.S. embassy in Baghdad. This is 5,500 people who live there. It's a small city. Nearly $1 billion they spent on this thing. And it looks like a fortress. This is about, as you see that picture there, that's the green zone. And they say the embassy is 104 acres, about the size of 80 football fields. Let's take a look at what this embassy looks like. Now, this is from an article about a year ago from Business Insider where they're talking about the staggering cost of it. There's part of the embassy inside, but scroll down to that next picture. Look at that. A concrete wall. And that's what reminds me of what we saw at Bilderberg in Denmark. This is a fortress set up to keep everybody out. Why? Because it's an illegitimate government. Listen, when we went to the Asymmetric Warfare Center at Fort AP Hill, I had reviewed the speeches and the analysis of people who were fighting the Iraq War, colonels who were there. And they said one of the things that you can tell about whether or not a government is legitimate or not is the amount of money they have to spend on security in order to maintain stability. Go back and take a look at that picture again. That is the picture of an illegitimate government. When you have to surround your embassy with that, you don't have the support of the people. You don't have a legitimate government there. How did they get to that point? Having never given us a truthful, reasonable explanation for why we needed to invade Iraq, why we needed to destroy Iraq, we now have no reason why we need to rebuild that country in the image of the Western bankers. This is an illegitimate government by their own standard of measurement. There is absolutely no reason for us to be there except for the profits that we mentioned earlier, except for the billions that are going to be made by the military-industrial complex so that we can sell things that nobody needs, like patrol boats in Afghanistan. That's what it's about. But it's also about a secret state. This is something that came up. I found a very interesting story that was linked on Drudge. The Secret State, Trevor Paglen documents the hidden world of governmental surveillance from drone bases to black sites. So this is a story from The Independent. Now, this fellow is an artist, but he's also a political commentator. He started out as a map maker, and he started to notice that there were certain areas, and of course, he started before Google Maps was out there. He noticed that there were certain areas that were taken off, that were not shown. And that got his curiosity, especially because as a young boy, he was traveling around with his father to different military bases, and he talked to a lot of people that were involved in black ops. So he started following this secret world, and he takes very distant pictures, as you just saw there, pictures with very long lenses of these secret military installations. And this is what he had to say, and I thought it was very similar to what we were doing or trying to do at Bilderberg with our coverage of it. He says he's trying to show us a world not as the media presents it, but as it is. And that's a world in which official secrecy has never been so well entrenched, ubiquitous, or extravagantly well funded. Boy, when I read that, it made me think of Bilderberg. You know, we show up, we can't hear what they're talking about inside. We can just get pictures of them from the outside, but we're there to document the fact that they're doing it, that they're there. It's a very important thing. And he also points out why we need to have an open and transparent society. He says about privacy, he says, I think mass surveillance is a bad idea because a surveillance society is one in which people understand that they're being constantly monitored. And when people understand that they're being constantly monitored, they're more conformist, they're less willing to take up controversial positions, and that kind of mass conformity is incompatible with democracy. And then he gives a second reason that it's a very dangerous idea. He talks about the linkage between transparency and civil liberties. So you can't have, if you don't have transparency, you're not going to have civil liberties. You cannot trade off your liberty in order to get security. When you trade off your liberty, you become a slave. You will be part of a security system, but it will be maximum security. And if there is no transparency in government, then you are going to be a slave as well. You're not going to have any civil liberties. That's why it's such a big deal when we go to military bases, when we go to the border, when they put gag orders on people covering the uncontrolled and encouraged immigration, massive immigration across our borders. That is being encouraged both by policy statements and by outright statements from our president and our vice president. And it's a very big deal when they threaten people who are working for Homeland Security, people who are working at the border, when they threaten them not only with employment sanctions, but with imprisonment. We have a society that is descending into secrecy and into tyranny. Well, stay with us because right after the break, we're going to be talking to Jakari Jackson and the rest of the InfoWars crew down at the Texas-Mexico border, and they're going to tell us what they see as people enter from Mexico into our surveillance society. Stay with us.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere from all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents. Radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply. There's only two ways to avoid this. Move south of the equator or properly protect your thyroid with Nascent Iodine. Looking to protect my family, I've done deep research. Nascent Iodine is the purest, cleanest, absolute best form of iodine to protect yourself and your family. It's made right here in the USA, completely non-GMO. I searched out the best quality and now have developed a double-strength form of Nascent Iodine, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Nascent Iodine is on record as one of the only safe ways to detox from fluoride poisoning. Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Secure your super high-quality Nascent Iodine today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com. From the water table to our soils to the atmosphere itself, our world is becoming more and more toxic each and every day. But it's not just the air outside that's toxic. Indoor air has been shown to have 2 to 5 times higher concentrations of pollutants than even outdoor air. And most Americans spend 90% of their time inside using toxic chemicals within their homes. There are more than 42 million smokers in the United States. Well over 1,000 types of mold and mildew linked to numerous conditions. And don't forget the fact that 6 million Americans live with pets they're allergic to as well. When I began to research these statistics, it was clear to me it was time to start cleansing my lungs in order to combat the toxic environment that we cannot escape, but that we can fight back against. Made with organic and wild cultivated herbs and manufactured in the USA, the new InfoWars Life Lung Cleanse is here in a convenient spray bottle that can be brought with you throughout any toxic environment. Now available exclusively at InfoWarsLife.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139.
Welcome back. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to go to Jakari Jackson, the InfoWars crew that's down at the Texas-Mexico border. They're looking at this massive influx of illegal immigrants. We believe this is done by design. It's part of the warfare state and the welfare state. Both of those are dearly loved by one constituency or the other. The Democrats, the left, love the welfare state. And yet, what has it given anybody? It hasn't worked in this country. It hasn't worked in other countries. Again, look at Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, where the bankers got 700% on their return on their investment. But the people today have to leave the country in order to get water, let alone medicine. They're dying in numbers where they can't even get coffins to bury the dead. That's what the welfare state is doing for people in Venezuela. It's what it did for people in China under Mao. It's always a planned implosion so they can rebuild their new society on the ashes of what was there. And of course, we see that over and over and over again in other countries with the warfare state. No one benefits from it except for the military-industrial complex, as we just pointed out. So both the left and the right love that, but those are the means of taking down, of collapsing the American economy. We're always accused of being racist whenever we talk about stopping the uncontrolled flow of immigrants in this country when we have a massive and expanding welfare state. Yet look at how the Mexican government itself treats immigration. Now, this is going back to their general laws of 1999. They say that they would only welcome foreigners who would be useful to Mexican society. And they point out that foreigners could be barred from the country if they, quote, upset the equilibrium of the national demographics. They also said that they could be banned if they don't behave and obey the laws of their own country. In other words, they're not going to allow criminals to come into Mexico. They have to be good citizens in their own country. And they also put in income restrictions. They have very definite restrictions on whether or not you'll be able to stay in the country, whether or not you can take care of yourself. They're not going to bring you in as a burden on their welfare state. And yet we're supposed to do just the opposite. For example, very specifically, in 2012 in Yucatan, they said that you have to have income or deposits in a bank balance that are equivalent to $95,892 in order to stay there. Or you have to have a monthly income that is equivalent to $1,918. That's up significantly from what it was before of just $1,200 per month. So they're not going to allow people to come in and just live off of the state there. They're not going to allow people to participate in the voting process to fundamentally change their legal structure. They don't even allow foreign citizens to participate not only in the political life, but even to own property. So we're going to talk to Jakari Jackson and crew. We find out that they get a little bit different treatment at the border than those who are coming across it illegally. Well, Jakari, tell us what's been going on down there. I understand at some point you got followed by the Border Patrol. They're looking out for you. They're not worried about the other people coming across, are they?
Yeah, that's exactly right, David. As you can see behind me, we're right in front of Mexico. There's just a small body of water separating us from Mexico. And there's Border Patrol. They're out here on their four-wheelers. They're out here in their trucks. They're out here in their speedboats. But, you know, we were a few miles away from here looking at another place where we were told that there were a lot of illegals crossing. We didn't see any illegals ourselves, but we did get followed by the Border Patrol there. They followed us probably about 2 miles down the road, and then we stopped and turned around and said, let's see if these guys are really following us. So we stopped, we pulled over, turned around, and they started following us again. So it was quite comical that they were, you know, looking at guys that had Texas plates. Meanwhile, you have all these illegals. If they want to find these guys, they can go to the Army bases. They can go to these Air Force bases if they're looking for illegals crossing the border.
That's right. And of course, people have seen crossings during the daytime, but I imagine you're probably going to see more people crossing at night than you will during the day, don't you think?
I would imagine so, too. You know, we're just working with the time we have. We're still out here in McAllen. We stopped at a local facility, and one of the ladies was telling us some of the hot spots to go. So we are out checking out those areas. We also have a few more spots we're going to go to in the coming days. So hopefully we'll be able to spy them, because we have seen them at the bus station, as I talked about in the Alex Jones radio show today. We saw them at the bus station. They were being picked up various church groups who, you know, fed them, clothed them,
right,
and got them back on a new bus to go to wherever their location was going. So hopefully we'll find some people out here crossing the border.
So the immigrants are, the people who live there are telling you where the illegals are crossing the border, because that's a regular thing. It's just that now it's changed in terms of the volume and in terms of the demographics, in terms of younger people coming across. Tell us what you saw earlier today after the report where you saw the churches busing them into deeper inside the United States.
Yes, we talked to a church group, alluding to the report we filed last night that was on drudgereport.com. We talked to one of the church representatives who was busing the children. Then we went to another facility that they told us where they were housing the children, giving them hot showers, giving them food, and preparing them to go on their next leg of the trip, wherever that may be. And we went to the facility. It was called Sacred Heart. It was a church there in McAllen. And there were people outside playing basketball. There is also some city workers out there. And I asked to talk to, you know, some of the facility advisors. All of them were busy in a meeting. And the guy said, well, you know, you can't really talk to anybody right now. But, you know, they weren't harassing us. They allowed us to shoot the footage, which was good. We didn't have any conflicts with that. So hopefully we'll get that same Texas hospitality as we continue along the border and just go to different locations to try to find out what's really going on and why this is not being reported in the mainstream news. Or if it is being reported, it's being whitewashed as some humanitarian aid. But you have to realize, David, because you have a lot of these children, as reported, I believe, on Breitbart last day or two or so, about a lot of these kids come in. They come in with gang tattoos on them. So we're bringing in gang members. You know, of course, not all of them are, but we are bringing in known gang members. While we have gang members inside the United States, you know, all the time you hear about the shootings in Chicago, the shootings, the gang shootings, the drug shootings that happen all the time here in the United States, and now we're bringing more problems to our borders.
I guess, Jakari, the question I have is, were you able to talk to anybody at these church groups? Because rather than if they're interested in the welfare of the child, I would think that perhaps they might transport them back to where they came from to reunite them with their family rather than transporting them further into the United States away from their family. Seems like they're not really aware of the bigger picture that's going on here.
And that's one of the questions I asked to the lady I spoke to off camera. She didn't want to be filmed, but she spoke to me off camera and she said, some of the families send money to the children, because that's one of the big questions I asked. I said, is the government involved in any way that you know of? She says, not that I know of. Most of the children, or not all the children that she knew of, that came here with their mothers, they were receiving money from family members who are already in the States or just from whatever other source. So, you know, that's the question I had. But she said the people that at least she worked with had family members already inside the United States.
That's interesting. Well, and again, you know, you can always say that it's a humanitarian position, but as I mentioned earlier in the news, there's a limit as to how much can be maintained in one country. And it's kind of like the situation when you're on an airplane and the oxygen masks come down. They tell you for the adults to put that on themselves first so they can help the children. And that's essentially what I see happening. And there's been Christian groups who have gone into other countries with missionary groups and helped them build their infrastructure, help them to build their standard of living. But to say that we can take care of uncontrolled immigration in this country, it seems to me like those people don't really understand what the bigger picture is. It's kind of misplaced compassion, I think.
I think it is, because the question is, let's say we do bring all these Central American people here. If this country gets this bad, and then what's the next place where people are going to want to go? Why can't we help these people, you know, try to find out what the problems are in their country so they don't have to leave to another country? Just find out what the issue is in their location, whether it's violence, if it's drugs, if it's whatever. Just try to find out what it is and stop it there so they don't have to immigrate to another country.
That's true. One of the things destroying their countries, of course, is the war on drugs that we're pushing so hard. The other thing is the bankers. And, of course, even in Hugo Chavez's socialist paradise, they were giving the bankers 700% return on their investment. So that is the bankers, it's the wars, it's the war on drugs that are destroying these countries. And yet we're not addressing any of those root causes. We're just making it worse and bringing the collapse into this country. And that's by design. Well, thank you, Jakari. We're going to look forward to your reports. Hope you can get some more information. That's a great find that you had. Unfortunately, it's sad to see that happening, that they would, send these children further into the United States. Even if their family is here, I would think that they would be able to be reunited with them. I've seen a lot of stories of very young children who were separated from their parents who were remaining behind in Central and South America.
Well, you know, you hear the stories that sometimes the parents come first and then send for the kids second, or sometimes it goes in reverse. So regardless, a lot of these children are being separated from their parents, from their families at some point along this trip.
Yeah, I would think that In America, if Americans did that kind of thing to their kids, of course, Child Protective Services would take them away.
Would be probably. All over. Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jakari. We'll be looking forward to more reports.
All right. Thank you, David.
Bye-bye. You can also help us and help yourself by checking out InfoWarsStore.com, where you can get Survival Shield X2 and great health products like water filters to get the glyphosates as well as the fluoride out of your water, whether you're on city water or you're on well water. Well, that's it for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Celebrate the spirit of freedom and liberty upon which our nation was founded at InfoWarsShop.com. Molon Lave is ancient Greek for come and take it. This popular design combines both classic Greek Spartan imagery with modern M16 assault rifles. Now available in women's tees and proudly made in the USA. And now you can protect yourself from corrupt cops with the InfoWars dash cam. It's your car's black box that records all that the driver sees and hears. And introducing the Block It Pocket. It renders your phone undetectable while protecting your private data and your health. Or take back your privacy and protect your personal information by getting your very own detractor cell phone pouch. So get incredibly high quality freedom-based products and help fund the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.
Welcome back to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew. You may not know our next guest by name, but you probably do know him if you're watching the show a lot. You may know him from the coffee he makes and helps bring to you. This is one of the many products that we sell that help fund our operation, help us grow, and help us get new listeners, hire new reporters, send them all around. But the Wake Up to a New America, we got the Patriot Blend and also the Immune Support Blend over here, which has several types of mushrooms in it that help promote the immune system and keeping your immune system strong. And we started selling this, maybe less than a year ago now?
About October, November.
Yeah, and it's been huge. It's been a big boost to the operation here. It's part of the InfoWars Lifeline. And, you can get them by going to the store and checking them out. But we're not here to talk about coffee. But I just wanted to bring this out just so you have a little context before our next guest is Steve St. Clair of Inner Health Botanicals. You may even try his inner food, which I've been taking for years, even before I worked here. I had heard the ads, and I'm like, well, I'm going to try it. And I had an interview earlier in the week with George Humphrey, and talking about when you put things in your mouth and you could taste the energy in them, you could taste the energy in inner food. And if green has a taste, it is definitely in the inner food. Welcome our guest, Steve St. Clair. How are you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing great.
Yeah?
I'm doing great. It's a wonderful day. And
are we keeping you busy with the coffee production?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope everybody's waking up, with the coffee every day. I mean, it's great coffee.
It really is. And you were telling us you have a coffee roaster. You have one person who works on this, and she's essentially being channeled by Alex every day?
Oh, absolutely. She has Alex on every single day. She's wild about it. She goes, oh my God, this is such an honor to do this for Alex, for everybody. She said, this is just wonderful. She couldn't think of a better job.
I mean, can you imagine, if just the people of Starbucks were roasting their coffee listening to Alex every day? There'd be a whole new outlook on life, I think.
Whole new outlook, whole new energy, being delivered by the coffee. It would just be awesome.
Yeah, and this is really good stuff. I drink both of them equally, and, I can't say enough about it. It's from Mexico. It's fair trade. It's organic. I mean, you're really going to get the best bang for your buck with this.
Oh, it's good stuff. We import this from Chiapas with the growers down there. We pay them fair prices, and we're in control of it from bush to bag.
Yeah, and not the bad bush. We're not talking about bush here.
Yeah.
So, how did you get started in this world of trying to create products that are going to be healthy for people. Like, what got you started into this?
Well, it started about 9 years ago. I was looking for something to do that was more in line with my belief system at that point. And I just stumbled upon the formula. We came up with a formula for Interfood. That's how we started the company. And we wanted to get healthier products into people that would give them energy, hopefully open their mind up a little bit so that they could actually gain different perspective, maybe. Get them healthy to get them off the couch, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
And it is a process of waking up. It's not just getting the information. It's also having the energy to do something with it. And part of that is detoxifying the body so you can accept this information, because it's not the same, Hostess Twinkie type information that if you just keep cramming it in, well, you'll get full eventually.
Absolutely. And the Interfood is, we get more comments about the Interfood than any of our other products still to this day about how it's changing people's lives and the nutrition, the dense nutrition that people don't get. We formulated this for the basic American lifestyle. Too much stress, not enough sleep, poor nutrition. And Interfood helps you get on the right path, you know, gets you going down the pathway to health.
If you had an Interfood beer, I'd probably drink it, definitely. Because I do a lot of tubing down the river with my family. We found that that's one of our favorite things to do. But one of the drawbacks of that is instead of drinking water, I drink too much beer. And then the next day I feel guilty about it. So I take an extra scoop of the Interfood and throw it in there.
Interfood's a great way to end the day when you have a day like that and start the next day. I do it every day. I'm kind of a purist, so mm-hmm. I just water some cayenne.
Okay. I mix it with a lot of different things, mainly because I'm lazy and I don't want to do a bunch of different stuff. But I do have my own recipe. I call it Yoda juice.
I make
the kids drink it every once in a while. By calling it Yoda juice, it seems cool. And so you
Absolutely.
Get your kids to drink it and
Absolutely.
Give them that, although they don't need much help getting energy these days.
Right.
So earlier we were talking, I said, you know, what's on your mind? What are the big things that you want to talk about? And you were talking about the Ukraine system may just be a whole front for a new business opportunity, essentially.
It could be. I've just heard recently, I know some guys in the oil field, and they were telling me that Big Oil is building pipelines from Eagle Ford and some other big fields because they're just burning off all that gas.
Mm-hmm.
And they're building pipelines to Port O'Connor and Corpus Christi, and they're building, you know, multi-billion dollar LPG facilities there. So they liquefy the gas so you can ship it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where are you going to ship it to? Who's buying this?
Right.
Well, if they cut off the gas supply from Russia, then, geez, that's like instant market.
What he's talking about is talking about cutting off the gas to Ukraine and those and the other areas, Eastern Europe and the other markets in there. And if they do that, they're going to need to get it from somewhere. And, oh,
right.
Look, here
we go.
Here comes the hero. here comes the U.S. providing now, instead of being a consumer of those products, now we're exporting them out and kind of changing the way it's been done in the past.
That's right.
And, you know, we have a lot of energy here. They've been finding gas fields everywhere. And oh, yeah. I just, you know, watched, I hadn't watched it. I'd seen the previews of it, that documentary Gasland, mm-hmm. and about how they've basically spread out the pollution areas into such small little footprints that they're almost undetectable. But when you add them all up, it's huge. And these gas fields, I was looking at with one of the producers here, Buckley, was looking at his area where his relatives have some land. And he said, zoom out, and you could just see all the little gas wells. And they said they poisoned one of his relatives' wells was poisoned. And, you know, at some point we got to look at a better way to get the fuel out that we need, because we have to have fuel to run the economy. Unless we're going to go back into the Stone Age. But we have to look at better ways to doing it.
There's
cleaner ways. There's always a better way to do something. You know, when they're spraying the Nalco product Corexin all over the oil spill in the Gulf, well, they have microbes that can do the same thing.
Same thing.
My dad was working on this project with some people, but they're small companies, and they couldn't even get time with the government to show them, hey, look, we got a way. We're breeding microbes that we throw them, and they eat the oil, and they turn it into, I think they turn it into carbon dioxide and water. Or it might have even been oxygen. I think they turn this stuff into oxygen. I mean, it is mind-boggling, the technologies that are out there, if we just give them a chance and don't go, well, we got to spray turpentine on it, because that's going to fix the problem.
What was the bidding process like there? There wasn't one.
Oh, I'm sure there wasn't. NALCO was in the pipeline already. And it was weird. At that time, I was in Chicago touring an old NALCO factory. They were working with the Army doing mock disaster drills, and they happened to be using NALCO as one of them. And the building we're going through, I'm like, what are they going to do with this building? They're like, well, they can't destroy it. It's so polluted. They couldn't cart this stuff away, so they have to leave the building. We're running around with cameras in this building. But it's just, you know, the chemical revolution was, you know, the 50s, and it's like we still can't get past that. We can't go, hey, we can create things that are even better. And we can still make money off of them, and we can still, I guess, the oil companies will have to control the market, you know, because that's how they design it. And that's, I think, they're afraid of. They're afraid of giving up that power and changing it to a different paradigm. And, you know, one way people can do that is by educating others and by getting healthy, you know.
Well, that's right. And what you're talking about are changes that are so disruptive to the balance of, well, they call it the balance of power and technology. And to me, it's completely out of balance, but they're so disruptive that they can't even foresee the kind of change. And the only thing they see in that change process is all bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll do
They're
just
afraid
about,
of it.
Oh, absolutely.
They're afraid of change.
They're afraid of that kind of change. They don't know what would come of it, but they're pretty sure that they would lose most of their ground that mm-hmm. they have, that they control.
They're like little kids standing on the high dive going, if I jump, it's all over. And you don't realize when you jump, you just land in water.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I know some people that have some technologies about hydrogen and things like this. And it's virtually impossible to get that commercialized right now because no one is willing to take the first step. No one's willing to take those first steps that are so necessary to get this stuff going. And you and I both have heard stories about, well, there's all kinds of alternative energy technologies, this and that are stymied before they ever really get started.
Well, the patents are bought up and then they're sealed away in locations that we'll never get to see.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that there's working generators in all these houses of the people that own the patents now.
Oh, yeah.
And they're having free energy.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But it's so disruptive that these, as George calls them, rascals will do just about anything in their power to prevent these kind of changes from happening.
Right.
And
totally,
it's unfortunate.
Totally
agree.
It is unfortunate. It's unfortunate for us. Yeah, I agree. Now, you're in Colorado.
I am.
And you guys are working on a great experiment right now, and it started in January, and you're not even involved in the marijuana industry at all.
Nope.
But I have to ask, I mean, as a businessman, you talk to other businessmen in Colorado, probably some who are in the industry, what are they telling you?
Well, they're loving it because their sales are out of sight.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And Colorado itself is going to experience marijuana tourism. I think the legalization of that kind of thing at this point is, I mean, there are people on both sides of the coin. Some people will go, it needs to be legalized because that way you take away all of the, the underground economy that's associated with it. It becomes more out front.
And you can tax it.
You can tax it. And boy, they do tax it. So I think it's 22% tax on marijuana sales.
Mm-hmm.
The state's reaping some pretty good benefits out of it. I'm not a user, you know, of pot, you know, but I know lots of people are, and it doesn't matter to me. I think that controversial issue is going to play out nationally. I think there's five more states that have it on their ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Big Tobacco was in this game 40 years ago. You know, they wanted to do vending machines and things
right.
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they were ready.
They were ready.
They were ready to
Never
do
happened like they thought it would.
Mm-mm.
And now it's kind of interesting the way it's coming to play because it's all these small-time independent companies that have sprung up that are doing this now. And I respect that. I think it's great that it's not so controlled by these big, large corporations.
And that's what I see is the downfall of it going to many more states is that eventually a big player is going to get in the game like a Monsanto and go, well, now it's time to start making the seed that grows in 2 months and produces THC that's 50 times powerful than what we have today. And we're going to buy everybody up and all these small commercial farms, and we're going to buy them up and then have one under a giant agribusiness umbrella, which I could see coming 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah.
So I think the time to get, if you're going to get in the game is you got to get in quick with these things before, which is good. When you're a single person or a small group, you can be more nimble and make those changes.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think that you're looking 10 years, you're going to see, at least the way things move at the present time and at the present pace, I think that that's what you'll see is more consolidation in that industry, and you'll see bigger players on a national scene.
And get back to GMO, Steve. What is new in that arena? A lot of people, a lot of our viewers are really into that as a topic of consideration, where they go out and you know they make videos, they protest, they get other people involved, they educate. Mm-hmm. What's new on that front?
Well, baby steps. It's finally, it's all about the labeling right now, I think, for the consumer.
Right.
You want to know what's in your food. So you got baby steps. I think it was, New Hampshire finally got a labeling law. We've got, you know, more and more people becoming more and more aware. But you still have so many people that don't even know what a GMO is. Genetically modified organisms. You know, what is that? Why is it bad? And it's a whole educational process. Jeffrey Smith has been, you know, the leader, I think, in that. Dr. Oz's wife is heavily into the anti-GMO, you know, no GMOs. And a lot of it too is there's just been some, lack of coordination between organic certified organic products. Mm-hmm. And now you have non-GMO certified products. And people are confused. A lot of people think that non-GMO is better than organic, when organic, certified organic products cover the whole gamut. Mm-hmm. They have to be non-GMO. No pesticides, you know, on and on and on. It's a highly regulated certification process.
But a non-GMO could have tons of pesticides in it.
Absolutely.
Be grown in depleted soils.
That's
and lots of fertilizers.
Exactly right. Exactly right. You know, there's no stopping these guys. You know, it's a marketing ploy. Non-GMO can mean, you know, chemical fertilizers, weed killers, all kinds of stuff. Whereas organic, you can't use any of that.
Right.
You know, that's very, very regulated. I mean, we're actually an organic certified facility. So we have the paperwork trail and organic certification is exhaustive, extensive. It wears you out.
But is it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, we're all about transparency in our company, and I think every company should be about that. I think that everybody should label their products truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
They should, tell the customer what's in it. What it means to them, what it, you know, it's just a whole,
It's like they tell us, what have you got to hide?
That's right.
You know, they always tell us that
so they can snoop
and look at our emails and track our phone conversations.
Sure.
What have they got to hide? I mean, if these products are so good, just put a label on it and let people decide.
That's exactly right. And I would like to have more and more disclosure. I would like, you know, people to open their mind up to the reality the reality of these whole green revolution type propaganda exercises. Mm-hmm. You know, the green revolution started in the 50s and it starved entire populations. GMOs, same type deal, much more dangerous.
Yeah.
In my mind. I mean, it's a threat to our existence as a species to me. And there's scientific evidence that comes out all the time about GMOs, and yet it's all discredited, you know, in the media.
Right. A few months later, well, maybe they didn't quite have enough rats in the study that had tumors, so we can't say that there were tumors, even though there's pictures of tumored rats who are eating GMO corn. But then they try to discredit that story that came out. And that was a big story. That was something that, you know, and it's just every time we find something, we're like, we got you. They come out, no. Fluoride's good for you.
Oh, right. Fluoride's good for you. It's good for your teeth.
Yeah, it's good for your teeth. It helps your teeth. My dentist says, we have the mayor of Austin said, well, I talked to my dentist and he said, American Dental Association dentist. Right. These guys aren't programmed.
No, no. Absolutely not.
From an early age.
The conditioning is incredible. I mean, the extent of the conditioning never ceases to amaze me. I've talked to people that were in California during the big GMO vote, the labeling vote out there. And they said, well, we voted against it because it was going to raise the cost of our food. And I was like, how is that going to happen?
They claim with printing new labels, because they'll have to print special labels for California. And that's going to cost so much money, it's going to raise the price up.
Yet they spent millions and millions and millions of dollars to fight it.
To fight it.
They could have printed a label for every product for years, you know. I think that we have to become better at responding to their tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where we, as a movement, I guess, if you want to call it a movement, have really come up short is education, education, education. Try to educate the people, trying to find the forums to educate people.
As you say, you don't think it's gone far enough. I think we've made big strides in educating people with GMOs because 5 years ago.
Oh, well, yeah. On a comparative basis.
Never have heard of this. This would not have been a controversy. Jeffrey Smith's been talking about it for a while. But it wasn't even on the radar with most people.
That's right.
And, you know, that was the great thing. Alex sent a crew out there to interview Jeffrey, and I've even read his book, Seize the Deception, and just the process of how they make these GMOs. I mean, just read about the gene gun, the gold-plated gene gun that literally shoots genes together. And you're like, what? This is how they do it? No, it's not. They're not taking electron microscopes and, like, getting the right pieces. You don't know what you're getting with that grasshopper gene helps your grass, you know, it'd be impervious to weeds. You have no idea what you're getting.
Exactly. For a bunch of control freaks, they have no control.
They're literally shooting genes with a gun
into
other genes, and that's how they're splicing them together. And it literally is mad scientist world.
Oh, it's mad scientist.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy that exposed the whole GMO thing in Europe when they were trying to get the potato thing, through the GMO potatoes, he got canned.
Oh, yeah.
Just immediately.
Very, very quickly.
Hushed him up and told him that we're going to sue you if you say anything else about GMOs.
Yeah. He did have the courage to still come out and speak, but, I mean, he was gagged. They did not want this information getting
absolutely
out there.
Absolutely not. I mean, four or five companies control most of the seed stock now in the world. That's, to me, that's criminal.
Yeah.
You should not be able to do it. And it's so insidious the way they go about this. You know, most of the small guys that used to, they have these little machines that go out and they take part of a farmer's crop and they shake the seed out so that he'll have seed for his next crop.
Right.
Well, they as we say in Texas, wallet whip them. They start suing these little guys saying that you are shaking our seed out of that crop.
That's patented.
That's patent.
You owe us money now.
Yeah, you owe us money, and they just sue them until the point where they have to give up. They have no more money. I mean, these guys make $30,000 or $40,000 a year.
Right.
You know, and it's just, it is infuriating to read these kind of stories to me.
What's even worse is they'll go after farmers if they have a Monsanto crop here and you don't have Monsanto, but it gets pollinated and starts growing it. Not by any fault of your own, they'll come out and see you for patent infringement.
All right.
I mean,
cross-pollination.
It is insane what they do to these
people. There are so many cases. I attend several forums where some of the guys that are actually fighting Monsanto, because of this cross-pollination, you know, these lawsuits, the wallet whipping and things like that. And unfortunately, I mean, there are way too many losses in the court system for this criminal activity that Monsanto is engaged in. And I don't know where it's going to stop or if it ever will. I hope it does. But right now the court system is clearly on the side of the corporate interest.
That's who funds the judges.
That's
we
right.
did a report on that. Judges are are funded like NASCAR drivers almost, and it's with giant corporations, so they're always going to side.
Absolutely. With them. And I think that it's like you said, we have come a long way. We got there's a longer road ahead.
I totally agree. We'll leave it on that for now.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Steve St. Clair from InterHealth
Botanicals.
Alex Jones here to tell you about how you can help spread liberty worldwide while also enjoying what I have found to be the best tasting 100% organic coffee on the planet. For more than a decade, my favorite coffee has come from the high mountains of southern Mexico, where the Chiapas farmers grow their unique shade-grown Arabica beans. We have now managed to secure these sought-after beans in a highly customized blend. Discover and try a bag of the Patriot Blend 100% organic coffee at InfoWarsLife.com. This coffee gives you a long, smooth pick-me-up for hours without the headaches and heartburn that so many other coffees give me personally. Hands down, this is my favorite coffee, and it's taken us years to secure connections directly to the Chiapas Mexican farmers. Drop by the site today, order a bag or two, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed. Available in original or with our immune support infusion blend, you will be supporting a free press, all the while enjoying a truly great tasting cup of my favorite coffee. Available at InfoWarsLife.com.